It's the Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 142. I'm your host, Adam Mangum. I'm joined first by Jay Drew of the Salt Lake Tribune. We talk about Matt Carlino's somewhat unexpected departure from the team. We also talk about spring football storylines and what they could mean going into the 2014 season. Matt and I then talk about the NCAA basketball tournament and whether we found that final game to be disappointing or not. We also discuss Carlino, spring football, and a little bit about the NFL draft and where we want Kyle Van Noy to end up. Once again, this is the Rise and Shout Podcast. Always check us out on LoyalCougars.com. Follow us, like us, and whatever else at iTunes, and you will listen to us right now. Welcoming back to the podcast, frequent guest and writer at the Salt Lake Tribune, Jay Drew. Welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks. Nice of you to have me on again.
Yeah. It's been a while. Mainly because of us. You haven't said no. We just we haven't asked. So, but we've got you back, Jay. And we'll start off with a story that's certainly not news, but one that we haven't talked with you about, and that's the recent defection of Matt Carlino, who announced he was transferring, and it seemed to be. In some ways, it's a fortunate thing for scholarships, but maybe not fortunate for the team and for next season. So what was your take on this? Was this an inevitable thing once Carlino got benched and started coming off the bench and was clearly not going to be the starting point guard for BYU over the remaining of his career, or is there something deeper going on besides that?
Yeah, I think it was inevitable, to tell you the truth. I lost track of this myself, the fact that Matt was going to graduate, that the graduation is within sight for him so he could transfer and remain eligible. I remember telling people in the middle of the season, I wouldn't be surprised if Matt transfers. And they'd say, well, yeah, but he loses a year of eligibility. And I go, yeah, I guess you're right. And it just didn't dawn on me that this NCAA rule that allows graduates to be immediately eligible as long as the program they're going to doesn't have a graduate program that, you know, in this case BYU has. So you knew just with Matt's track record, yes, and with the track record of his parents, if you've read any of the history of him when he was a prepster in Arizona and then moving on to Indiana and then committing to the Hoosiers and then changing his mind and committing to UCLA and then not lasting only a couple of weeks at UCLA and transferring to BYU. So just that track record, I think, I hit myself on the side of the head and said, I should have saw this coming. And like most people, I didn't see it coming well enough.
Yeah. Well, I didn't see it coming either, Jay. So, and quite frankly, I don't remember reading anybody saying that, they thought this was coming. So this one caught people a little bit off guard. One of the questions has been throughout this entire season is there seem to be two dueling narratives that are mainly fan generated. I don't want to say that you guys in the press have really fed this as much as Twitter and message boards have. But one is that Carlino is this kind of egotistical, ball-hogging, prima donna point guard, and he just didn't fit in at BYU. And then you hear other folks, sometimes even his fellow players, say they enjoy playing with him and that he's a really nice kid and that none of this other stuff about him being a prima donna, at least as a teammate, is true. You've covered the team. You've been around these guys. Do you think either of those is true? Are we looking at something in between? Or is his transferring have really nothing to do with the fact that maybe some folks in the program were getting tired of him?
I don't think Matt was. His teammates loved him. I talked to Matt in the locker room after the Oregon loss. He was going on and on about how he loves his teammates and how every single one of them he would go to war with. And he loved these guys, and he was really going to miss Eric Mika going on his mission. I think all that was sincere, and I've never heard a teammate say anything bad about Matt. either on the court or off the court. So to be honest with you, I think this was entirely or almost entirely driven by Matt's parents, especially Matt's dad. I think that he's the one that told, hey, Matt, you know, you need to go to a place that where it can prepare you more for professional basketball. His father thinks that's in his future. You know, that's all obviously debatable. But I really think, I haven't talked to Matt. I haven't been able to reach him since this whole thing went down. But that's just my gut feeling, is that this thing was demanded of Matt by his father. I really think that's true from what I've read about him and just what I'm talking to people. And like I said, I haven't talked to Matt. I haven't talked to Matt's dad, Mark, about this. So, you know, I'm not going to say 100% that's what happened, but that's my gut feeling from just watching this whole thing unfold, is I really think that that it was more parent driven than it was Matt being unhappy at BYU or BYU being unhappy with Matt.
So there was going to be a scholarship crunch next year, and as we look forward, that is, at least is somewhat alleviated by Carlino transferring. But the one thing that is not alleviated is the fact that, well, that the depth of what we might have seen next year among the BYU backcourt is now going to be different. Whether it's depleted or not is up for debate, because some of these guys that are going to play are either coming back from missions or freshmen. What is your take on maybe Coach Dave Rose's comfort with the backcourt he's going to have? You're going to have a injury recovering point guard. You're going to have some very young backcourt participants. Is this something he thinks keeping him up at night, or do you think he feels like the cupboard is sufficiently full that losing even a player that was a major contributor over the last few seasons is not going to be devastating for the team's ability to compete next season?
I think Rose is really concerned. I think it's a major blow losing Carlino. A lot of it depends on Kyle Collinsworth's recovery. It doesn't miss a beat if he comes back. I think they're mostly okay. I don't think you can replace him, Matt Carlino. When he's reined in like he was at the last half of the season after the benching, he actually played his best basketball as a Cougar during that stretch. And if you really looked at it, in the last 10 minutes of games, Carlino had the ball in his hands. It wasn't Collinsworth. Collinsworth started out as the starting point guard. But in crunch time, they usually had Matt handle the ball more and had Kyle more on the wing or more down low playing the four for rebounding purposes. So I don't think Kyle Collinsworth can totally replace Carlino. There's a kid coming in by the name of Chase Fisher who is really, really good. He's the Wake Forest transfer. He's not a point guard, but boy, can he shoot. I've sat in practice and watched the kid stroke 15 straight three-pointers, almost Jimmer-like. I don't want to get people all excited, but this kid's a shooter. And so I think they're going to be better in that category. But as far as that ball handler during crunch time, right now it looks like it's probably going to be Skylar Halford. And I don't know if Rose is comfortable with that or not, but that'll be interesting. Who's going to bring that ball up court in the last 5 minutes of games and break presses and handle pressure? I don't know that they have a guy on the roster right now who can do that, to be totally honest with you.
Yeah, yeah, and I quite honest with you, I don't think they do either. And maybe someone will emerge, but at least as of right now, that might be a little bit of a hole. Well, let's move to football. There's obviously news happening in the last few weeks with spring football. So one of the storylines that popped up, obviously with Cody Hoffman leaving, there were a lot of us, including my brother and I on this very podcast, who worried about the wide receiver position. Has not been a strength besides Cody Hoffman over the last couple of years with injuries and maybe some inconsistent play. Now, after a couple of spring practices and a scrimmage, it almost seems like fans have done a 180 and feel like, oh, now we're just brimming with playmakers on the outside, and some of these guys are fast and dynamic. Is that fair after what you saw in spring, the expectation that maybe we're going to have a very different aspect to the offense this year on the outside with the wide receivers, or do you think it's too early to tell?
To be honest, I think it's too early. I think it's, Nick Kurtz, one of the JUCO transfers, very highly touted, didn't look real good the first couple weeks of spring camp. Now, after a few weeks, you could see it. You could see the talent. You could see the separation he got. You could see the hands and the speed. So if he keeps progressing, I think you can see it more and more. Of course, two of the major weapons are arriving, you know, over the summer, the UTEP transfer, Jordan Leslie, and the Ashanti, forgot his last name, also, a Blackman from Riverside Community College there in California. So the guys that we've seen in spring camp, really, with the exception of Kurtz, probably won't be catching passes this fall. A kid by the name of Colby Pearson has been running with the ones. No one's probably ever heard of him. Kurt Henderson, who has played a little bit in the past, is also running with the ones, and I don't know that we'll see a lot of him. The Michael Davis, the kid that played DB last year, is really, really fast. I can flat out say that with no hesitation. Now, you know, BYU's had other fast guys before that didn't have the greatest hands, so the jury's probably still out on him. But he's got speed to burn. I guess it's early to tell. The one kid that has really emerged, and Bronco mentioned it Friday, is this Taron Houck, who's kind of a hybrid inside receiver. He's even played a little tight end. He's looked really good in camp. He looks like he could be a real contributor. So maybe even the J.D. Faults look kind of in that kind of territory, that inside receiver
sure.
type. So, I think the jury's still out on the receiving core, but it definitely looks like it's going to be an upgrade.
Yeah, definitely. There's, besides Hoffman, obviously, there was a lot of inconsistency at that position of the last couple of seasons. Switching to who will be throwing the ball to them, obviously Taysom Hill is a very good running quarterback. He put up great numbers and in many ways was the best running back at times, when especially when Williams wasn't healthy, that we had on the field. Now all of a sudden, everyone's talking about whether he can take that next step as a passer. Then there's the news that he's going to be, at the Manning camp as one of the instructors there. Did you see anything? And it seems a little split among the press whether he's turned over a leaf. Mendenhall certainly is positive in his assessments, but as an observer, did you see anything where you thought, this does seem like a better passing version of Taysom Hill?
To be honest with you, I did not. We get to watch last half hour or so of spring practice twice a week. There were a couple times that I missed for either I was with the basketball team or others. But what I saw, a lot of it looked, I hate to say it, like the same old Taysom, to tell you the truth. Throws the ball way too hard to underneath receivers. A little bit, just didn't have that touch. Missed the guys long on deep throws. Now, he did make some great throws. There are some, but he made some great throws last year, too, in the regular season. But you still see those same old things that we saw before. So I'm just going to have to say, like I said with the receivers, I don't know yet, to tell you the truth. I don't think we'll really know until we see him in a game against real competition, guys pass rushing, guys in his face, things like that. The one thing I will say, it looks like he's a lot more patient in the pocket. There were times last year where he'd just take off and run at the drop of a hat, and it looks like he's really consciously trying to, to stay in the pocket and go through his progressions and that sort of thing. So in that aspect, I think he has improved.
Another position you and I have talked about on this podcast for Well, this is our third year doing it, so it's been for 3 years, Jay. We've talked about the defensive backfield, and you and I are both, I would fairly categorize us as defensive backfield skeptics, and that every year we're skeptical of their performance. Last year they were actually better than I thought, and as I look at this group that's returning, as well as Trammell and Johnson, who of course are coming back off of injuries, but Daniel, Bills, and some of the depth, suddenly I'm actually optimistic about this group and think it could be a strength for the defense this year as opposed to historically maybe a little bit of a weakness. Do you share my optimism about the defensive backfield?
I do. As far as the corners are concerned, I think they're going to have some of the best corners they've ever had with the JC transfer, Trenton Trammell, and Jordan Johnson coming back from his injury, and Robertson Daniel coming back, although, you know, there's been talk and that he could move to safety. So the corners are definitely going to be better. I think that's a no-brainer. I don't know at safety if they're going to be better. Daniel Sorensen leaves a huge hole.
Yeah.
A lot of people, rightfully so, say they're going to miss Kyle Van Noy, and I agree they are. But the guy I really, really think is going to be hard to replace is Daniel Sorensen. He made a lot of plays, and not only, you know, as a safety, but also on special teams. But that's the key position to this defense, if you ask me, is that safety position. And of course, Craig Bills is solid at one of the safety positions, but the other one, it's going to be interesting. They got Kai Nakua, who they're high on, has looked good in spring. They've got, like I said, Robertson Daniel maybe moving back there. They might even move Dallin Levitt, who played some at corner. They might move him back there to safety. They also have Sky Povey that got his year back that's going to be playing. But I don't see any of those guys being nearly as good as Daniel Sorensen. So that's the one weakness in the secondary that I see they have to get figured out.
No, absolutely. I agree there. The corners could be great, and free safety is still a TBD. Maybe a little bit like what we've already talked about at some of the other positions. Get you out on this last bit. So as we look at the spring storylines, obviously there's everyone wants to talk about Taysom Hill and his spring and the position around the positions around him. When I read on your blog as far as things that you asked and some of the tidbits from camp, what are the things that you think that Coach Mendenhall is most worried about, one or two things going into next season that maybe fans and even your brother in the press aren't really covering because it doesn't seem as interesting, but it's something that the coach notices and the coach is worried about?
Well, Bronco said the one thing was deep snapper replacing Kevin O'Mary, who did a nice job last year. And so deep snapper would be the one. I think the kicking game is still, they've got guys that they just, it'll be really interesting to see if, first of all, Justin Sorensen a lot of times could get the ball into the end zone on his kickoffs.
That's right.
Huge. I don't know that they got a guy that's strong-legged enough to do that. And then they've got Trevor Sampson and Moose Bingham kind of right now battling. They got a return missionary, Corey Edwards, Lavelle's nephew or great nephew or something, coming back off a mission, and he'll be in the mix. But I think the kicking game is going to be a big question. And then I think inside linebacker is another little issue with trying to replace Lonnie Unga and, of course, Spencer Hadley was hurt, so they kind of got along without him. But the inside linebacker is going to be – that's a big position. That's the guy that makes a lot of tackles. They funnel a lot of stuff to him. And it'll be interesting to see if they can – they got Zach Stout coming back from, you know, being kicked off the team a few years ago. And it'll be interesting to see if what they can do there. But I would say those are kind of the issues that is kind of keeping Bronco awake at night.
Well, Jay, we appreciate your time coming on the podcast during your off season. Though I know from experience that sports writers don't actually at a paper like the Tribune have an off season. Not entirely anyway, but we appreciate you coming on, and we will definitely have you on again before the season starts, and we encourage everyone to go out to the website and check out Jay's coverage of the Cougars.
Hey, thanks a lot, Adam.
Rise and Shout Podcast, Matt. We've been on a break, but we're back.
Little hiatus.
I have been traveling a lot for work, and it's nice to be home.
I've just been lazy.
Well, we all know about that, but 70 degrees today in Minnesota, Matthew.
Oh, I think it's 70 degrees outside at 9 p.m. right now.
I'll punch you in the face.
Actually, it's only supposed to get up to 80 tomorrow.
Oh, well, see, once you start getting over the 80s, you're not going to, that's not going to impress me because I don't like over the 80s.
It's not really bad until you get into the mid 90s. Then that's bad. That's pretty hot.
Oh, so you mean from mid-June till the end of August?
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, that sounds lovely.
The 100s are hot. That's hot.
Yeah, especially with 105% humidity. We're basically, you have to have an aqua lung to get it to go outside.
You're in a boiling pot of water at that point. That's where you are.
I'm not even sure I know what an aqua lung is. Did I use that correctly?
I don't know what that means. I would have just gone with gills.
gills would have worked, but it seems so predictable. I was trying to.
Yeah, gills has been done. Aqualung, clearly not. And now that you've done it, we understand that that's for good reason.
Yes, probably never again. So Matt, let's open up with a question out of the tweet bag.
Tweet bag.
So the Irish Mexican that's at Bullishism on Twitter asks this question, Matt: is it possible the NCAA basketball tournament could have ended any lamer than with UConn and Kentucky? Obviously, he was not a big fan of one of the lowest scoring games of the last 10 years in the championship. Matt, could it have been lamer? I have an idea on this one.
I don't know that I'm qualified to answer this question, seeing as that I fell asleep during the game. I'm not even kidding. I did. I fell asleep.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how exciting that matchup was for me.
So I actually enjoyed the game. It was not a great game, but I thought it was fine. I think it can get worse. Butler, remember the Butler game where they couldn't hit a shot to save their life?
It was like they forgot how to play basketball. That one was weird.
It was bizarre. They had been playing so well in that tournament. I really thought they were going to beat, was it Duke? Are they playing Duke? Who are they playing that year? I'm going to have to look that up. Anyway, I enjoyed the game. It wasn't a great game. It at least stayed close towards the end, you know? But I would say I understand where he's going in that it was such a fun tournament with so many awesome finishes and Kentucky among themselves had some just awesome finishes too, right? That you looked at it and you go, oh, it was UConn that beat Butler.
Yeah, it's the UConn game is the one you're thinking of. It was Duke the previous year, but that one wasn't
year that Butler shot like 2% from the floor or whatever it was.
Yeah.
So anyway, this is to me, Matt, it's just one of those things with the tournament. Sometimes the two best teams aren't going to make it to the end, or even two of the best 10 teams in the tournament. Because I know Kentucky fans and UConn fans will argue with me. Neither of them coming in, nobody thought they were among the top 10, or they wouldn't have been seated where they were seated, right?
Except for that one Kentucky fan that got the tattoo of Kentucky National Champions 2014 on his cap. Well, did you see that on Twitter?
Yeah, it was everywhere. It was everywhere. Twitter, Facebook, Pinterest,
Snapchat. I don't want to talk Pinterest, really.
WhatsApp.
Instagram.
You have a Pinterest account. Don't deny it.
I do. I haven't logged into it in like a year.
Yeah, that's a lie. You just looked at some recipes and some crafting ideas before the podcast.
Maybe I did.
So anyway, but it just, you don't always have that epic showdown in the championship.
Right.
It just doesn't always happen. It was, to the Irish Mexican's point, it was a pretty lame ending in many ways. I would have much rather, quite frankly, seen Florida and Wisconsin play for the championship. It would have made for a more exciting game. Now,
I might have stayed up to watch it.
The TV ratings were down. Matt, it's a little strange because this was the first one where it wasn't on CBS or a network. And then they did that strange thing with the fan cast. Did you watch any of those in the Final Four where they had partisan announcers calling the games?
I didn't. I thought about it, meant to do it, but decided to just watch normal basketball games.
So,
but you know, I'm not. I don't hate on announcers either. So as you know, I do a little bit, but I think for some people, you know, that I can see how that would make a difference with the experience, or especially if it were a team you were really into. I think that could be a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. If this was BYU, it would be pretty cool if Dave McCann or Greg Rebel, you could watch them call the game.
Yeah.
Be kind of cool, right? So I was one of the Final Four games. I didn't know about this. Somehow I had missed that they were going to have these team casts or whatever. And I was just flipping through the menu, saw it, and I didn't even notice what channel it was and clicked on it. And all of a sudden, there are these two dudes who were the UConn announcers who I've never seen before in my life. And I'm like, who is calling this Final Four game? And it took me about, I don't know, 5 minutes to figure out what was going on. They're doing their pregame spiel. And I'm like, well, I mean, not that I'm the biggest Jim Nance fan. And quite frankly, Greg Anthony, I was about done with him by the Final Four. But I was like, well, I mean, I watch a lot of sports. You'd think by the Final Four, I'd know who the announcers were.
Right.
But does it matter to you, I mean, that it's on TNT or TBS, the championship game versus CBS, or is that irrelevant to you as a fan?
It's irrelevant to me as a fan. I think for most sports fans, you know, have cable or DirecTV or otherwise connected well enough that they're going to get most of the channels these games are on. I mean, if they put it on like True TV or something, yeah, that, you know, because I don't even know that all packages carry that.
Right.
But, you know, if it's on a channel that's part of like most cable packages, I don't really have an issue with that. I mean, come on, this is 2014. There's more than four channels.
Yeah. I don't really care either. The only reason I still have cable and or satellite is because of sports.
So you have cable and or satellite. Would you like to explain to me what that means?
I have had both in the past. I have cable today. I was just saying I've also in the past had satellite. But I switched to cable to save some money. And quite frankly, at this point, I really, if ESPN came to me and said, give me $20 a month, and you can watch anything streaming on ESPN, I'd be done with cable.
Yeah, I've been a DirecTV guy for a while.
I had been. It was getting expensive, and yeah, I've been thinking about
I've been thinking about making the switch,
but I can't give it up because of sports.
Yeah, that's the only issue, right? If you could get ESPN on some type of subscription basis or stream it through the Apple TV or whatever.
And then say come tournament time, same thing. For the whole NCAA tournament, you pay $60. I would do it. All of this would end up being cheaper. I already pay however much a month to watch any baseball game I want.
Yep.
I know a lot of NBA fans buy the NBA League Pass, especially if you live outside of the city of the team you follow. You know, college football, same thing. If they came to me and said ESPN, and then because basically at this point, most of BYU games are going to be on ESPN or BYU TV. And if I could stream that, I'd be out. I'd be out, man.
Yeah, I thought back in the day when they had the ESPN game day plan and all that, I thought we were headed to a future of a la carte sports viewing. But, you know, the cable companies got wise to that.
Well,
you know, they know that once that becomes available, subscriptions are going to just fall through the floor.
And they all paid, all of the networks and stuff just paid a lot of money for rights to things. Almost every major tournament, playoffs, league has re-signed recently. And that is a, and not to mention if you're a baseball fan, all these contracts signed with local cable networks for the games. So unfortunately, I was with you, and I really was hoping for this a la carte thing, but in the end, the only thing people watch live anymore, our age and younger, is sports.
Yeah. Everything gets DVR'd.
Maybe something like Walking Dead or something where, but even then, people are probably watching it a half hour late. But people, if it's something big like that that you're into, I don't watch The Walking Dead, but you don't want somebody on Twitter to ruin it for you, you know? But outside of a couple of those shows, it's sports or it's DVR'd or Netflix, right?
Yeah.
So, anyway, well, Irish Mexican, you got more than you bargained for with that question, buddy.
Wow, we went around the world on that one.
We pontificated.
We did, okay. Indeed.
So, Matt, since this is not news, but since we haven't had a podcast since then, wanted to get your reaction. Matt Carlino decides to transfer from BYU. On the shock scale, Matt, 1 to 10. Oh, by the way, we just started our segment, Cougars in the News.
Cougars in the News.
Sorry, I a little premature there. So anyway, Carlino decides...
No, it was just a lead-in. It was a lead-in. I think that's what they call it in the biz.
Yes, that is true. And we are in the biz.
If
by that you mean doing a podcast for free and making no money and calling it the biz.
That is exactly what I mean.
So Matt, on the shock scale from 1 to 10, 1 being, putting up a Christmas tree for Christmas, no shock at all. 10 being something that's really shocking. Wow, that was weak. That was terrible. That was terrible. 10 being what's really shocking. There's something. There's
gotta, I don't know, I'm just going to kind of leave you hanging out.
Yeah, I can tell. Funny. I appreciate that. That's what brothers do. So anyway, brother, on the shock scale, 1 not shocked, 10 very shocked. How shocked are you that Matt Carlino is transferring?
I'd say 7, but a 10 for me is like I woke up this morning with my head stapled to the carpet. Right? So, I mean, that's
crap,
pretty shocking.
You came up with a better one.
That was easy. It was easy. That's a gimme. That's a quote out of a movie.
I know.
It's a gimme.
I know.
Anyway, I don't know, maybe 6, 7. I mean, I was pretty shocked. Not as shocked that, it's not stapled, it's sewn to the carpet, excuse me. But had I, you know, I was shocked. Maybe I'm just naive, but I didn't really see that. I didn't really see that coming.
I would be 7 or 8. I didn't see it coming. In retrospect, it's not shocking, right?
Not but, really. In retrospect, not really at all.
But when I saw it, and, you know, Jay will have been on the podcast and said his piece on this as well. But I just, you know, I believed what everyone was saying, and Jay backs this up, that the team got along, that there were no personality issues on the team between Carlino and his teammates. So, you know, but he was not going to be the starting point guard next year.
I feel like that's probably what's at work here. It's not about not getting along necessarily. I don't think in this case. I think his previous transfer was about, it was just a bad fit.
Yes.
The program was a bad fit. The personalities were a bad fit. It was
a lot of weird stuff going on.
It was a bad experience for him.
Yeah.
I don't think that his departure from BYU is really on that level. I think this is more about getting an opportunity for more consistent PT and trying to find maybe a scheme that's going to work out better for him. It'll be interesting to see how that pans out. But I don't get the impression that, you know, that this was some type of nightmare scenario for him.
Okay. So getting back to a totally arbitrary scale, 1 being doesn't matter to the 2014-2015 Cougars, 10 being devastating to their chances of being a good team, how would you rate his departure's impact next season for BYU?
2.
That low? See, I would add like 4 or 5. I think it's impactful, but certainly not anything that can't be overcome. But you think with some of the guys that are either transferring, coming back for mission, or true freshmen, that the backcourt depth will be fine?
I think the very fact that he's leaving is kind of a signal that he knows he wasn't going to be a significant contributor.
Sure, sure.
You know, I think what would be more impactful here is if I woke up with my head sewn to the carpet.
Yeah.
That would be more. I'm just going to try and milk that
more,
as much
more
as I
impactful.
Can.
Yeah, see that.
No, seriously, though. I think he'd be coming off the bench. He'd be playing stuff. But I think we're going to have some pieces in place to make up for that contribution. It might be a little bit different. Might look a little bit different than what people had imagined. The rotation of playing time looking like. But I think at the end of the day, I don't think there's going to be a moment next season where we say, oh, if we would have had Carlino in off the bench, we probably would have won that game. I don't see that happening.
Okay. I think there may be early on. But I share your optimism that by mid to late season, that I think Rose and his staff and the players will adjust and the holes will be filled. I like Matt Carlino. I'm not a Carlino hater. I am, not a Steve Pierce at Post Jimmer Carlino, fan leader either. But
I think he might actually be Carlino.
Oh, that's a good point.
In disguise. I've never seen them together.
That's true. But I've actually never seen Steve at all.
So he may not even exist.
That's true. It could be.
You just inceptioned me.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So spin that top there, buddy. So I don't, Greg on LoyalCougars.com, and in case you don't know this, we're part of LoyalCougars.com, and you can catch some great BYU sports coverage there at LoyalCougars.com, at LoyalCougars.com. But Greg took the angle that he thinks it will be, it will put us a little thin, especially at point guard. And I agree with him at the beginning of the year, but I think by the end of the year, Collinsworth will be healthy. Jordan Chapman coming back, a couple of transfers coming in, and maybe even Frank Bartley the fourth, right?
Yes.
He didn't end up playing a ton of meaningful minutes this year, but he was a true freshman, and maybe he, I didn't see, there were flashes, but, I think there's some stuff around there. People will talk about Chase Fisher from Wake Forest, the transfer. I think he's more of a shooter. I don't think he's a point guard, but does contribute to the overall depth. So, Matt, spring football, you may have heard of it.
Yes, it's a wonderful thing.
They do that every year. So Matt, we've talked about some of the positions and whatever else. Let's talk about what you feel better about or worse about now that spring football has come and gone. Okay, so I'm going to give you a few statements, things that you and I have talked about on the podcast before. Okay, and you can either go feel better, feel worse, feel the same. Okay, offensive line is last year was not very, very consistent, and I may be being a little too kind there. Do you feel better, worse, or the same about the offensive line?
I feel better about the offensive line. I think they've made some adjustments there. I think this is kind of the next phase of installing the offense. This is something that Anai talked about when he came back, is resurrecting this offensive line culture with this team. They were not successful in doing that in 2013. But I think, I think getting the offense back to where they want it to be is an iterative process. And part of phase two is going to be fixing the problems with the offensive line.
All right. I agree with you. I agree. All right, next statement. Taysom Hill as a passer, not as a complete quarterback, but just as a passing quarterback, feel better, worse, or the same?
Maybe I'm just drinking blue Kool-Aid here, but I'm feeling better. And I know it's a scrimmage.
Is that blueberry Kool-Aid? Or like there was that was a purple Kool-Aid. That was the dinosaur Kool-Aid that was really lemonade.
Oh boy, really? That's where we're going right now?
Purple Saurus, I think, right?
Purple Saurus Rex. I believe you're right. I believe it was. I think you're right. I think I had a Purple Saurus Rex t-shirt.
I wouldn't be surprised. But anyway, sorry, you're drinking a lot of blue, maybe blueberry flavored BYU Kool-Aid. And you feel like Taysom is making some steps as a passer.
Yeah, I know the spring game is really a glorified scrimmage, right?
Yes.
If even that.
Yes.
But But three touchdowns, 307 yards. It's pretty good.
Yeah, and, you know, it seems that the press, Jay just talked about this on the podcast, seems like the press is split on this. Some of them are saying, wow, he looks better as a passer, and some of them are saying, looks kind of the same. So I don't know what to make of it, quite frankly. I guess I probably feel the same as I felt a month and a half ago.
Yeah, that's probably fair. But I think what's really going to help him, and maybe this is one of the things you're going to bring up, is depth at the wide receiver position.
Ah, yes. That is my next question. Very good lead-in, sir. But before we leave that, does the fact that he was invited to be an instructor at the Manning QB camp affect how you feel about Taysom Hill whatsoever?
It does. It makes me feel better about my blue-colored glasses I have on.
Right.
Because, you know, if you have an outside source such as that group of people evaluating his talent level and inviting him to participate in something like that, I think that's a signal that he is good. Yes. And that the excitement around him is merited.
Riley Nelson, for example, was not invited to that camp.
No, he was not.
Jake Heaps was not invited to that camp. So Matt, the next one is wide receiver. We lost Cody Kaufman, which of course is not good, but there seems to be an extreme level of excitement about this group of wide receivers. So here's the statement, okay? Last year, BYU's wide receiving core outside of Cody Hoffman was mediocre, okay? Are you feeling better about that group, worse about that group, or the same?
Mediocre. That was very kind of you.
I try to be kind.
That was very kind. I feel a lot better, and I really just have two words for this. Nick Kurtz.
Kurtz, I honestly think by the end of next year, and it may take a while, right? Because there needs to be some rapport, and, you know, one of the things with this spring, Oppo and Matthews did not participate a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I think we could have wide receiver depth for the first time since... It's been a while, Matt. It's been a while.
Been a long time.
So I think, you know, I think we could really have some, and some playmakers. They were doing some of that, like, wide receiver, you know, in motion option handoffs thing.
Yeah.
And if you could have some wide receivers where I wouldn't cringe when they got the ball, like Falslev, that was never a good deal for him. You know, it wasn't right for his skill set. I always thought they put him in a bad spot whenever they put him in plays like that. But if you had some guys that could do that, man, that play really freezes the outside linebackers, right? And keeps them from the middle of the field, that leaves that open for Williams or Hill to run crazy. So I'm excited, but I am also still a little, you know, until some of these guys, we see them in games making the catches. And if Hill hasn't improved enough as a passer, in some ways, I don't want to say it doesn't matter. It always matters to have better players, but it doesn't matter as much, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that does make sense.
Last one, Matt. Defensive backfield. It is historically kind of a weakness of BYU, though some of our best teams in our history, including, I know, one of your favorite teams in 1997.
1996 is my favorite team.
Oh, 96, sorry. 96, 97. I don't know. I was on my mission. That the defensive backfield this year could be a strength. So, defensive back depth, you feeling better than you were at the beginning of spring? The same or worse?
I feel the same, but that being said, I felt pretty good about it coming into spring. As you may remember, when we this is one of the things we talked about a few weeks ago. I think that we've got some real talent there. You know, we've got a player who, you know, hurt himself, wasn't able to play last year, who's looked really good in the spring, and Trent Trammell. And
yes,
we've got a couple other guys. Some of the ones, you know, Dallin Leavitt is somebody that Mendenhall mentioned at the end of camp. You know, I think there's some opportunity there. As a unit, they performed better last year than they were expected to. And I think they've got something to build off of with some of these new additions.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Matt, finishing up Cougars in the News.
Cougars in the News!
We should mention, of course, I believe it was yesterday, we're recording this on Wednesday night, the BYU softball Cougars had a no-hitter, the 16th such game in the history of the program in a 9-0 victory over Utah Valley. Tori Almond, McKenna Bull, and Ashley Thompson were the three pitchers that combined on the no-hitter. Only one walk, so only one base runner in the game. Pretty impressive. So a shout-out to the BYU softball Cougars.
That's good work.
Yeah, that is good work. Though Jay was on and said, told me it wasn't, I don't think he said this on the podcast, but Utah Valley, maybe not the best team that they'll face this year. Maybe not.
Yeah, but you know what? A no-hitter is a no-hitter. I mean, that doesn't happen real often.
No. It's pretty cool. It's very awesome. Kudos to all three of those pitchers and the defense behind them in making that happen. So Matt, let's shift gears here to the draft, okay?
Yes.
Before we go to the draft, we had another tweet bag question that I liked.
Tweet bag.
So this is from Eduardo Estefan. I don't know if that's his real name. That's the thing about Twitter. But he is at LALOCHILE on Twitter. I just spelled that out. He says, guys, thank you, Eduardo. In college basketball, there's talk, in college football, I mean.
Wow, you're struggling here, aren't you?
Well, he says in CB. I think he means college football. There's talk about going 12-0 to have a shot to be ranked in the top four, you know, to get into that new college football playoff. Which teams are the biggest challenge to do it? And I think he means which teams are the biggest threat. Who can do it? So, Matt, assuming I've interpreted his question correctly, if you had to
pick... Which is a little bit of a stretch.
Well, yes. If you had to pick one team right now that you think is the biggest threat to go undefeated next season in college football, who are you picking?
Alabama. Today? Alabama. And
it's kind of easy. I've got a dark horse for you, though. As much as it pains me to say it. Okay.
What are you about to do?
Stanford.
Oh, really? You hate Stanford.
I hate
you
Stanford.
You hate Stanford. I can't believe Stanford. Now, you thinking this is one thing, but you actually saying it out loud?
So hear me out. Hear me out. And this may be, to quote Bill Simmons, the biggest reverse jinx attempt ever. Okay? So.
Wow. You are a hardcore Red Sox fan, aren't you?
Yes. Yes, I am.
You start talking about trying to reverse jinx people?
Yes, yes.
That just sounds like a Red Sox fan thing to say.
Oh, you're a Red Sox fan too, you Nats.
I am not as big of a Red Sox fan as you are. I'm trying to be fair there. I did, having grown up, you know, where we grew up, but
yeah, it's kind of in the blood.
I was not a diehard baseball fan growing up. I've become much more of a baseball fan in adulthood.
Yes, you repented.
Which is why my baseball leanings, my baseball heart, is in the nation's capital.
Yes, yes. All right, we're done with that. But anyway, so Stanford, I don't think the Pac-12 it'll be a good conference, but not a great one. So that helps them. Right, to go undefeated. Mm-hmm. The second thing is they've got some key players returning from a team that was quite good last year. And last year they had 7 victories, Matt, against teams in the top 30, more than anybody else. Whether you measure that by, Football Outsiders rankings or Sagarin, whoever you want to pick, whichever analytics you want to pick, they had about 6 or 7 victories versus top 30. They're well coached. I mean, you know, I do not like Stanford, and I have no desire to see them be a 12-0 team. But if I was picking somebody besides Alabama, I'm with you. You pick Alabama, right? But they do play in the SEC, and I hear that's a good conference.
Do you know who else could get themselves into that group? Is a team like Ohio State?
Oh, sure. Ohio State could do it. As much as that pains me to say, too.
I don't like saying that one out loud either, but you know, if you run down their schedule, they've got a lot of winnable games. Michigan State on the road, I think, would be a tough one.
Yep,
that'll be a tough one. But you know, they're starting out with Navy, Virginia Tech, Kent State. I
mean, those are games that they'll win. Yes. You know, and in the
Hokie fans, you're like, whoa, hey, slow down there, buddy.
No, Virginia Tech, I think, isn't a gimme. It's not like Kent State.
No, but they should.
But they were only eight. Virginia Tech was only 8-5 last year.
Yeah, they should beat Virginia Tech pretty easily, I would think.
But I think Ohio State could get out of conference play undefeated.
Now, that's another team I don't like. Urban Meyer and Ohio State, to me, were the perfect marriage.
Oh, man.
Perfect marriage, because I don't like him, and I don't like this school. So it was easy. You know what I mean? Like, I never hated Florida, but when he went there, it was kind of like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, Urban Meyer's an interesting guy.
You're playing the diplomat. Well done, sir.
I'm not sure what to do there. Yeah, he's, yeah, I don't, yeah.
So let's just.
The good news is he'll be there as long as it takes for them to catch up with him.
Yeah, and as soon as things start heading downhill, he'll probably retire. So I'm with you. It's Alabama. So let's talk, Matt, about the draft, which you and I love. We've talked about that many times on this podcast. But let's specifically talk about Kyle Van Noy. Okay?
And the reason he has a beard?
Yes. Can you believe it?
Oh, on a scale of 1 to 10, how shocked were you?
No, I am outraged. I'm shocked and appalled.
Shocked and appalled.
Beardedness.
I'm going to write a letter to the Daily Universe.
I already have. Several times.
I believe that you have.
They have not published it.
Sorry.
So, in Jay Drew's most recent blog post yesterday, he mentioned several teams that have been interested and have worked with Van Noy, including our New England Patriots. You are a big Patriots fan. That I know.
That would be... I would buy so many jerseys.
Oh, I would have one as soon as they were available to be had.
As a matter of fact, I may go buy one right now without any numbers or name on it and make my own Kyle Van Noy Patriots jersey.
There you go.
And I'll wear it whether he ends up there or not.
So another team that was mentioned is the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then he points out that Mel Kiper Jr. on ESPN, you may have heard of him. He has great hair.
He does. Much better hair than I.
In his latest, that's great on a curve. Latest NFL mock draft, he had Van Noy going to the Detroit Lions. So let me ask you this, Matt. Okay, putting the Patriots aside, because we both, as fans of that football team, we'd be stoked. And quite frankly, I think it would be a good fit because I think very few coaches are probably innovative enough to use Van Noy the way I think he should be used at the pros, which I think he's a hybrid linebacker / safety, and that you move him around, right? Mm-hmm. And not just as rushing the quarterback, but doing other things. And I think Belichick would try something like that with a guy as versatile as Van Noy. But putting that aside, Matt.
I can't put it aside. My feelings for the Patriots are completely irrational.
I know, mine too.
And it's Kyle Van Noy.
I know. And our feelings for him are completely irrational.
Yeah, irrationality abounds in this conversation.
Okay, so not putting that aside, but moving on. Detroit Lions, if they had Van Noy and they had Ziggy Ansah, do you become kind of a semi Detroit Lions fan? Do you start rooting for that team at that point? Has have you got enough Cougars on there and enough Cougars that you really like that you just kind of say, I'm going to do it?
I'll tell you what. I don't know if I'd necessarily become a Detroit Lions fan, but if I were the type to have the NFL Sunday ticket, that might be a game that would definitely get DVR'd and watched every week.
Okay. I was going to say almost the exact same thing.
you like how I said that, though? That might be a game that would definitely be DVR'd and watched.
Yes, that was very well qualified. Very well qualified. You'd think
that would be a ton of fun to watch. I think as a BYU fan, we would all love to see that. That would just be cool. And you look at what, you know, when you notice the difference when Ziggy was gone and kind of how that impacted how they could use Kyle Van Noy for them to get to do that at the pro level, oh, that would just be fun. That would just be fun.
Yes, it would be fantastic, quite frankly. It would be awesome. But we don't know. And the thing is, with all this prognostication, and I like Mel Kiper. You know, I know there's a lot of Mel Kiper haters, and he's wrong quite often, but all of them are, on predicting the future of 22-year-old dudes in a very tough league. But, who knows? It could be the Jaguars, it could be the Patriots, it could be the Lions, and it could definitely be one of the other 20-some-odd teams.
Right? Yeah, who knows? Who knows where it goes?
But I do think a team that a team like the Patriots or the 49ers, who've got maybe a more innovative approach to defense, would probably be a good fit.
I can cheer for the 49ers again, so that'd be fine.
Yes, I can. Without Alex Smith as the quarterback, I can cheer for them as well. So, Matt, anything else you got before we sign off?
How am I supposed to concentrate now on anything? Now that we've talked about the potential of Kyle Van Noy landing in New England, I'm going to be a mess for days.
You are already a mess.
Seriously, if he gets drafted by New England, I will be, as soon as they've got a jersey on the website, I'll be ordering one.
That is pathetic, and it's completely understandable because I will do the same thing.
At least the jersey, come on.
Oh, no. I will do, I have not purchased, I should say that because I still own it. I have not purchased a Patriots jersey since my Drew Bledsoe jersey, which still hangs in my closet, okay?
It should be hanging on your back.
It does on occasion.
I have a Tom Brady jersey. I would love to compliment it with a good, strong defensive player jersey. If it's, I see myself in
the
next.
Did you say I'd love to compliment it with?
Oh, yeah.
That's fantastic.
I was at one point going to buy a Brewski jersey.
Yes, that is quite awesome.
That would still be a fun one to have. But, yeah. Oh, man.
So the Patriots picked 29th. We're going way farther into this than almost pretty much
anybody. Oh, we're in fantasy land at this point.
That almost anybody else. But quite frankly, I don't give a crap. This is our podcast. So they picked 29th. What else do they pick? I'm trying to find their picks. Where is that draft tracker? Teams, players, schools. This is riveting for the listeners. So my point is, I don't know when all they pick, but I fear that they just don't pick in the right spot. 29 may be too high.
Yeah.
And by the next time they pick, he may be gone. He might be gone, which would be unfortunate. Would be unfortunate. All right, Matt. Well, you try to concentrate on other things like your family and work, if you can.
It's going to be difficult. It's going to be difficult.
Yeah, I can understand that. I'm not judging, Matt. I am not judging.
Yeah, so the Patriots have the 29th pick. And then the 30th pick in the second round, which is the 62nd pick.
Yeah, he's not going to last that long, I don't think.
No, he's not going to drop that.
I mean, you hear Kiper and other guys talking about how he's impressing teams, which the thing is I think he's one of those guys that he's not going to get up into the top 15 or anything. He's not the physical freak that Ziggy Ansah is, right? But I think he's one of those guys that when we had Tom Melton on, the draft guru guy. Mm-hmm. He's one of those guys, when you watch the tapes, you go, he's a football player, right? He makes plays. He's smart, and he does the right things. I don't think he lasts till that second Patriots pick. So.
Yeah, probably not.
What do you think about the Patriots particular? There's been some chatter of them taking a quarterback with that pick. A Aaron Rodgers to Green Bay-like maneuver.
I think there could be some value here in quarterback because the water I feel like is a little bit muddy right now. Maybe it's getting a little bit clearer, but you know the Texans will probably take Teddy Bridgewater. But I think there's a little bit of value out there in the court, but not real flashy value out there in quarterbacks. Like you know, and Aaron Rodgers was kind of like that.
Yeah.
And so if somebody that fits that description is available there, it wouldn't surprise me at all for them to take him.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll be the quarterback thing is going to be interesting because I think there's a lot of debate as to who's good or not. Even I'll the one who, you know, Bortles and Bridgewater, who I think most people have rated fairly high, have a lot of division. Of course, we're not even on to Johnny Football, who some people think he's a top five and some think he's a don't draft period.
Yeah, there's a billboard. There's a billboard up in Houston encouraging the Texans to keep Johnny Football in Texas.
No, stop it.
There will be some Texans fans that are going to be ready to burn their couches if Manziel's not drafted.
Stop it. That's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous.
I'm just all I'm doing is relaying facts to you. These are things that are facts.
I don't think any of these guys are true number one pick type quarterbacks, but in the end, it doesn't really matter if you're the Texans, if you think you really need a quarterback, you know, because right now McShay has got all three of these guys we just talked about going in the top four, right?
Well, if you're the Texans, you've kind of created that position for yourself. Yes. You need a quarterback.
You need a quarterback, and especially long-term. Mm-hmm. And the Jaguars need a quarterback. I think most people would say that the Browns need a quarterback. The Raiders definitely do, and I don't think any of those guys get past the Raiders. One of them will get drafted by the Raiders.
The Jets need a quarterback.
No, they don't. They have Geno Smith.
Like I said.
He's really good. And Mark Sanchez. Not that Mark Sanchez anymore. Do the Jets even have a draft pick? No, they're like 18th.
Does it really matter?
Nah, I don't care.
The Jets can't draft. Come on.
No, they can't.
They don't know what they're doing. They're like, they're totally lost out there.
Well, we're going to finally actually finish this podcast, Matt.
All right.
And we'll be back maybe next week or maybe in 2 weeks. We'll see how it plays out. But definitely have some things to talk about. And maybe even do one of our fun go through every game in the schedule and decide who we think we're going to beat.
Oh, those are the best.
And it changes every time.
Oh, it's awesome.
Changes every time. All right. Well, check out loyalcougars.com for great BYU sports coverage. And, of course, recommend us to your friends, the Rise and Shout podcast. And we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars.